You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome into another episode of the Odds and Audibles podcast. Eric Scopel, Jared Mack here today. Day one of fall camp. We talked about, I'm trying to think what the natural metaphor for this is, because if media day was the first day of class, I don't know what this is. I guess this is like the first day of class after the orientation day. Maybe I misspoke. Wednesday was like freshman orientation day. Now I'm really just butchering this metaphor.
Sure. I guess today is more of a first day of class than media day.
People were doing stuff. They had a full, they had a practice this afternoon.
Sure. Yeah.
Oregon was out in the practice turfs. We'll get to a bunch of stuff in terms of what we saw, but I thought we'd start with just kind of Dan's opening statement, what Dan had to say after practice. As you'd expect, day one of fall camp wasn't perfect. I know apparently in Los Angeles, you've had perfect practices early on in spring camp.
The best ever run.
Colin Cowherd, Lincoln Riley, miles ahead of Dan Lanning's practices, apparently, because Dan came out with like a lot of optimism for the direction, but also admitted like they're a ways away from playing games. They need to work on a lot of things. If they were to play soon, it wouldn't be pretty. But that's the kind of thing you want to hear, I think, honestly, from your head coach. I think it would be weird, honestly, if he came out and was like, we killed it.
This was great.
This was so good.
We're taking the rest of August off.
Yeah. We actually decided we're not practicing again. We did so well. Like, we don't even need to do more. And we have to also acknowledge that they can't be in pads until early next week. They were basically in shorts and jerseys and helmets and trainers, not even cleats. So they're not out there doing full contact stuff. And I'm sure the drills that – and we didn't get to watch a ton. We'll get into some of what we saw later. But it's not like I'm sure they were in a ton of game-like situations anyway to even simulate what a game would be like. But what they were in was a situation where clearly Dan came away thinking execution wasn't perfect. He mentioned – some of the conditioning wasn't perfect. He talked about how the speed of the team looks great, but by the time they got to drill period 8, it wasn't quite as impressive because guys were a little gassed. Mm-hmm. And then just overall toughness. You know, one thing I wasn't even sure we talked about, but I will because I got it written down in my notebook here, is they did put up 4 new keywords inside the practice field. No, because it's going to connect. And the words, the words are connection, toughness, growth, and sacrifice. And Dan did bring up the fact that toughness – was something that was lacking today from players in terms of how they were practicing. And that if they want to get to the growth part, they need to work on the toughness part. And I'm sure if you were to continue the narrative, you could get them to say they need to show more of word 4, sacrifice, to get to more of the growth part. And they need more of word 1 to get to the growth part too, because like they all kind of work together that way. But I think notably day one of camp, you kind of expect some ups and downs. And that's what it sounded like happened.
Yeah, this is exactly what I would expect Dan Lanning's first press conference to be after the first practice of the first fall camp of his first year at Oregon. Just a lot of firsts there in a sentence by me, a lot of firsts going on in Eugene for Dan. It's just going to be a lot of ups and downs. He was, you know, very obviously, I think he started with good first day, but they're nowhere near ready to play in a game. And that's, you know, that's what you'd expect. There's a lot of newcomers still. We'll get to that in a bit too. There's a lot of guys returning. There's a lot of new, installs on offense and defense. And again, they're just in shorts and just their jerseys and some helmets. They're not in anything crazy. There's no hitting. This seemed like a cardio day for a lot of guys. That's just basically what it was like. Maybe there was some one-on-ones or, you know, kind of like a 7-on-7 component of practice, but it wasn't going to be anything crazy. It just is it signifies the beginning of fall camp. It signifies the beginning of the college football season. And for what we were able to watch, that's basically what it looked like. I don't think any of us expected there to be some competition period or for it to be really highly intense in terms of physicality. But, you know, it was clear that the strength staff, who led the opening warmups, obviously Wilson Love is very into it. Lanning, you could be heard echoing through, I'm sure, that entire area. So if you live near Autzen, I'm sure you heard Lanning today at one point. So there, obviously it's intense in that sense, that the practices aren't lackadaisical or anything like that, but it's the first day of school. You know, nobody goes too hard on the first day of school unless it's some AP physics course that you did all the summer work for, which certainly, you know, that's something different. But today was
I'm really excited to keep this school narrative and like
should we do it the entire season?
Yeah, the entire year. It's
week 8 midterms.
Here we go.
All right, I like it. All right, so UCLA will be
UCLA is midterms, I guess, and the Pac-12 championship or bowl game is final exams, I guess.
Georgia's like the worst pop quiz you've ever had in your life.
Yeah, Georgia's a terrible pop quiz that you had no preparation for, which is obviously not accurate because they're going to be preparing like crazy the next month to get ready for it. I don't think they'll be unprepared. I think they'll be facing a syllabus which is very challenging, put it that way.
There you go.
I think there was a couple of individuals that Dan brought up. I did want to, before we get into that, just bring up, I think, perfect participation from a scholarship perspective, as far as I could tell. I did get there early. I do have on my notebooks all the players that were there. I think it's perfect attendance from a scholarship perspective, as far as I could tell. James Krepia did the same exercise. We compared notes, and we think everyone was there. Two players.
I sadly missed out on that opportunity to join you. Had some SD card trouble today. Just couldn't find it. Ended up getting there punctual early, frankly, but not early enough. So tomorrow we will be able to compare notes and really figure out who was there and who wasn't.
You weren't 50 minutes early like I was. Humble brag. But no, and two players not fully taking part. Offensive lineman TJ Bass was watching the offensive line, was doing some agility drills while they were doing, again, it's not full contact, but some sort of technique drills of kind of engagement with the other offensive linemen, working on technique and all that. He was doing some agility stuff. It didn't look serious. Dan Lanning was actually asked afterwards, and I know I already said Dan's not going to talk injuries. He didn't really talk injuries. James Krepia asked, was it serious? He says no. And then the other player, Justice Lowe, was the lone – I guess he forms a one-man rehab group because he was pulling a sled up a hill, which sounds weird. It reminds me of, like, what I would have been doing in, like, December of 2001 when I was, like, 12 years old with my little sled going down the snow. But, like, a weight sled. They're working on some – like, getting some strength back in his legs. He's also doing a stationary bike when we left. Dan also asked about Justice, didn't seem to indicate there was anything serious there. Both, I think, were just one-word answers of no. Jared will have the full transcript up later on Duck Territory. I'm sure it's going to be fun doing that one. What was going on with this guy? Nothing. What was with this guy? Nothing.
Quick and easy.
Great news, because the guys that were not taking part in the spring, I should say, Justin Flo, Brandon Dorlis, Popo Amavai, I can go through Keon Moore Hudson. There's a lot more names that were in and out. Everybody else was taking part. In fact, like, it was not only full participation, but like, or full attendance is perfect almost, but basically full participation with the exception of two guys who it doesn't sound like are serious. So that's great on the injury front to start fall camp. And then I did want to, just because we're talking kind of sticking with the Dan part of this, thought it was notable, you know, he hasn't been someone really to single out individuals. I don't know if he really singled him out, because I think he was asked about him first. You can correct me if I'm wrong on that. But Caleb Chapman, transfer receiver out of Texas A&M. Dan was, like, pretty excited about what Caleb kind of showed day one and the kind of prospects of what he can be at Oregon. And it's notable because this is the guy we haven't talked a lot about. I wonder if he would have been here in spring, if we'd be having similar – if we'd have, you know, a Caleb Chapman, Chase Cota, we'd be talking about them kind of similarly – in terms of both being senior wide receiver transfers, both the same initials, by the way, CC, both guys that have dealt with kind of a little bit of ups and downs in their career. Caleb's had a lot of injuries. Chase just kind of had up and down usage, I guess, in offenses, but I think people feel pretty confident about them both. But I thought Dan seemed pretty excited about Caleb's first day, and I thought that was notable.
Yeah, he was originally asked about Jordan James, who Dan said has performed well and had a nice long run today. So that's a good sign as well. But then he brought up, because I think he was originally asked by Jordan about Jordan James and the freshman newcomers, but he brought up Chapman as a newcomer who's not a freshman, which Chapman is not. I think he's in his final year of eligibility, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm not 100% sure, Eric, can you look that up?
Yeah, he's a senior.
Yeah, but Chapman is a 6'5" wide receiver who was pretty good at Texas A&M, but like Eric said, really limited by injuries. He had two season-ending injuries in 2019 and 2020. 2020 was his best season, or at least was looking like it's going to be his best season. He had 7 catches for 150 yards and 2 touchdowns against the number 5 ranked Florida team during the 2020 pandemic shortened season. 2021, he missed the season. And this past year, he transfers to Oregon. This could be, I think, you know, we've talked about this before, probably on this podcast, but I know Eric and I have talked about this before in general. Very low risk, high reward guy. Obviously, this is we think it's a very deep and a talented wide receiver room. On paper, it looks like that. During the games, we'll have to see, but there was a lot of shining moments, especially in the Alamo Bowl and the spring game, that leads you to believe that this could be a good wide receiver room. And Chapman could be somebody who is just a completely different body type. He's like a mature version of Dante Thornton because they're both 6'5". Thornton's still on the skinny side, although I don't think they're going by the skinnies anymore. I think they're going by the hot boys, if I'm not mistaken.
Which is that better? I don't know, man. Is that better? I guess it is.
I don't know. I think I don't want to go by anything like where I'm the skinnies in a sport that is really where you don't want to be overly skinny.
I also don't know if I'm self-proclaiming myself one of the hot boys. I don't know if that's something you'll ever get me to do.
Yeah, but we're not Dante Thornton. I'm not going to question the guy, but Chapman, I think is a very low risk, high reward guy. He's kind of like a 1-year deal in the NBA or professional sports, where it's like, well, if he takes off, that's great. You got him for 1 year, but if he doesn't, then he's here for 1 year and could provide depth. But I'm excited to watch him play. I'm excited to see where he slots in the depth chart. I'm kind of just excited to see where he plays in the field, because I feel like he's probably going to be on the outside because he is a 6'5" target. But down the goal line, I could see him doing something on the inside too, and just taking up space and taking away defenders from other people, or just posting up somebody using it as like almost an end zone fade, not a goal line fade. But I think it's really interesting that Dan brought him up, because like you said, Eric, he does not really bring up people just because. You either have to directly ask him who it is, or he has to be just like the second coming of somebody for him to talk about them.
I'm going to pose the question that Jared Denny of On3 posed to us afterwards, or maybe he just made a proclamation, which was he doesn't think Chapman can be one of Oregon's 5 best receivers. And I think he's probably right, and the 5 best being Thornton, Franklin, Coda, McGee, and Hudson. Probably right, but I'm not totally – I'm like totally not discounting the fact that he ends up being one of those guys. As we talked about, like really unique athletically, big, experienced. I think he could contribute. I think he could push his way into that discussion, but I do think I agree ultimately with what other Jared Denny of again, rival website, who we happen to be friends with, so we're outing our friendship here with one of the competitors.
Everybody knows.
What's that?
Everybody knows now.
Oh, no. But I think we kind of all – I kind of agree with his sense of, like, that there's a quintet, a group of 5 that everybody feels pretty good about being kind of the group. But I think if there's a guy on the roster who could force their way into that, it's probably him.
It's probably him. I think he's the obvious pick. I mean, Isaiah Brevard, I think, has all the physical gifts and the talent to do something. It's just we haven't seen him do it. And at least Caleb has actually like gone through college season, has actually produced at a high level, although albeit for a short time. I'm just looking through the roster right now. Coda's already there.
Tyler Casper,
who Lanning mentioned again today. Who made a nice catch. He didn't elaborate it. Kyler made a nice catch. So that's good, I'm sure. Justice Lowe is another guy who's out there, but Isaiah Crocker too. He's been around the program. Josh Delgado. Yeah. There are options, but I think the size and the speed that Caleb Chapman possesses and the physical maturity and the maturity of playing multiple football seasons, I think probably puts him at a higher level than everybody else. I would probably say Crocker and Delgado are the two that could probably be in that group. But again, I think the size and the speed and the length that Chapman has puts him ahead.
Not to extend this conversation too much further, because we didn't outline 7 minutes of wide receiver talk, but there's not a whole lot in the back end in terms of what we saw at practice, so we'll just use it here. Delgado is one that's interesting because I do think he gets kind of forgotten a little bit, and I did think it was notable, and I know he's probably good friends, I think, but Sean Dollars, when we did our breakout players of the year predictions, we asked – go check this out up on the side. I think it's a pretty good content piece, but we asked – I think it ended up being 19 answers we got up of who on the team – you know, had a good offseason and could have a quote-unquote breakout season. And Dollars pointed to Josh Delgado. I think, again, they grew up in the same part of Southern California. I think they've known each other for a while. I think part of the same recruiting class, I'm pretty sure.
Year after for Dollars, I think.
Is it a year after? You're probably right. Yeah, they're close regardless. They've been around the program a long time. I think pretty good friends. I just thought that was kind of notable. Delgado is a guy who I know for me, I just kind of forget about, and I don't know if that's totally fair because I think injuries hurt him, you know, one of the years recently and last year. But you think back to his first season, I think in that, was that 19?
Yeah.
Sort of like, had some decent moments, was like come up productive. Might've started a couple games. I just think he might be.
He started a bunch of games. Starter against Auburn. But I got a lot of injuries on that team too. Yeah. I think that's an interesting name. I think the problem is like Chapman is like, there's a lot of guys in front of him who play the same kind of spot. Cause Delgado is a slot guy. And just because of his body type, his play style, but you have Hudson in front of him, McGee, and even Dakota could probably play the slot too, if he's not a possession guy out wide. So again, not a wide receiver talk for, for a practice where we didn't see a single football thrown to anybody, but either an assistant or an offensive lineman.
Yeah, three starts in 2019 just to finish. Let's tie a bow on that segment.
Nice.
Really, there isn't much more. We talked about doing 20 minutes. We'll probably do just over that. I think.
Specialist stuff. You want me to get
into
that?
I wanted to get into that. But first I wanted to talk quarterback centers and who's snapping to who, because it sounds ridiculous. We didn't get to watch a ton, and that's fine. I understand it. It's early on in camp. Frankly, it would probably not be to anyone's benefit for us to watch them maybe just like in shorts and jerseys kind of struggle to throw the ball around and all that. So I'm totally understanding of that. But like, I think there's two things we saw that are kind of notable from a depth chart, playing time, position battle perspective. And the first one I want to talk about is centers to quarterback snapping, which again sounds absurd that we're making anything out of this. But I think it's probably somewhat notable that Alex Forsythe snapped to Bo Nix, Ryan Walk snapped to Ty Thompson, Cannon Rossi, a walk-on, snapped to Jay Butterfield. Cannon, by the way, he's a walk-on, but he was like second string center most of spring. And I think he's a guy that they look at as, I don't know, I'm not going to say he's ever going to have a Ryan Walk career where he'll get a scholarship. But he's kind of in that mold where he's a pretty respected walk-on guy. Like he's not, and again, this sounds derogatory to walk-ons in general, so I should probably stop talking, but like, he's a guy. Like he could have a role on this team in future years, possibly this year, if injuries go crazy. Like, I think that the staff probably trusts him more than other walk-ons, so maybe a fair way of saying it. Holden Whipple, new walk-on, was snapping to Jake Van Dyne, who's a walk-on transfer from Missouri State. And then Jackson Powers Johnson was the fifth guy snapping, and he was snapping to Marcus Sanders, who's a true freshman quarterback walk-on. The last two names I brought up there probably don't mean much because I don't think any of us expect Van Dyne or Sanders to play. And if they do, boy, the season's probably in a really crappy spot. Not to be mean, but those are walk-on guys that you bring here not thinking they're going to probably play much at all, if ever. But I did think sort of notable Forsythe to Nix. That kind of indicates what we expected coming in is probably somewhat true, which is that Nix is opening camp as, and again, maybe we're reading too much into it, but I don't think it's by accident that they have it that way. I think there has to be some hierarchy. And Forsythe was snapping to Nix. That feels notable. Thompson being quote unquote ahead of Butterfield feels somewhat notable. again, the rest probably doesn't matter much, but stuff we're passing along that kind of means something. And unless you have anything else on that and kind of any takeaways there, because I don't know if there's too much, Jared, I'll throw it to you just for special teams.
Yeah, I think my one takeaway is Jaxon Powers-Johnson being, like, I guess the fourth or the fifth center. I think that kind of shows that this staff looks like they prefer him as a guard more than a center. So mm-hmm. I think that's something Powers-Johnson, when he played last season, I think he primarily played guard. I don't really think he played center because I think Walk moved to center when Forsythe was hurt.
You're right. Exactly. Yeah.
Powers-Johnson was also hurt for a majority of the season as well. But I don't mind him. I like him at a guard. I like him in a center. I like him playing. Let's just be as simple as that. All right. Special teams are everybody's favorites. I'll start with the kick returners first. In order, kick returners on kickoffs, not punt returns. Christian Gonzalez, Marquise Irving, who's donning number zero this season, Byron Cardwell, Sean Dollars, Noah Whittington, and Darren Barkins were in order of how they received from the kick machine, which is not a punt machine. It is a kickoff machine. Thank you, James Crepia of the Oregonian. Punt returns. We have Chris Hudson, Seven McGee, Chase Cota, Jordan James, number 20. Sorry, I can't remember his number. And then Josh Delgado. That was it for punt returners. As far as punters go, I think this is the most – yeah.
Can we hold the thought? Because I just wanted to reflect on the return stuff before I move to the punter stuff. And now we're kind of teasing something interesting because the punting is actually a good question. I can tell you're excited to talk about it. Okay, for the listener/viewer, were punt and kick returns happening simultaneously?
Yes.
Okay. And I ask that because I think most listening would expect to hear Chris Hudson and Seven McGee's name very prominently as kick returners as well. And there were punt returners because those guys handled the duties last year.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think we'll have to see what Dan figures out because maybe he likes the combination of Christian Gonzalez and Marquise Irving back there as kick returners and not Seven McGee as a punt returner.
It very well could be.
I don't know.
I'm just trying to make the distinction for the listener of like, we heard those names separated. I think it's very possible because they were going on simultaneously that the punt returners also factor into the kick returners. One other note before we go to punter, I'm calling Marquise Irving Bucky. I asked him what he wanted to go by and he said Bucky. So
Bucky Irving,
you can do whatever you want, but he's Bucky to me.
That's fair. I do like Marquise as a name. I think it's pretty darn cool. So another quick thing though, in spring camp, the same style of practice. These are the same names, albeit without Jordan James and Bucky Irving. These are the same names that were receiving kickoffs and receiving punts. So
good point.
Like the combination of Chris, Seven, Chase, Delgado in some order were always the dudes fielding punts. The combination of Gonzalez, Cardwell, Dollars, Whittington, Barkins, always fielding kickoff. So I don't know if they have this preference over one or the other and who does what. I don't know. We'll find out. Moving on to punters. Now, a reminder that Oregon brought in four transfer kickers this past offseason. And joining Camden Lewis, they brought on Andrew Boyle, a transfer from Washington State, Adam Berry, a transfer from Temple, Ross James, a junior college transfer from East Central Community College. And
Alex Bales,
Brandon Missouri, and then Alex Bales, who was a transfer from Cincinnati as a kicker. The punters in order of punting were Boyle, Adam Berry, Ross James. And then for kicking, where they did little like squib kicks to offensive and defensive linemen to help them train in that special teams area. The kickers in order were Camden Lewis and then Alex Bales. I don't think there was a lot to take away. I thought that there were a lot of poor punts today at practice. I was watching the actual punts themselves. A lot of them careened into outside the boundaries. But then again, it was a really small area that they were going into. There was only one real misfire. I don't remember who it was from. Eric, I know you'll think this is interesting, but it was Carson Battles and then Luke Basso.
It better be Luke Basso. He's the future of the snapping game, boys. Everybody needs to
know that. He is the future. Everybody needs to know Holden Whipple as well. I think that will not be the last time we reference him on this podcast. Yeah, just real quick, that was about it from practice today.
Well, I was just going to say, and I'm sorry, I don't need to cut you off there because it sounded like you were wrapping up and I just had a couple thoughts on special teams. Punters are a concern. Tom Snead was really good the last couple of years. He averaged like 43 yards a punt for two consecutive seasons. Like, I think his predecessor, Blake Mayamone and Josh Bidwell are like, and I may be forgetting one other. I just did a special teams all-time list. I think those are the only guys to do over 42 yards in two consecutive seasons in school history. I think it's overlooked a little bit. I know 1 year's a COVID shortened season, but Tom Snead is probably on your Mount Rushmore of Oregon punters.
Are we doing a Mount Rushmore?
I don't think anybody's ever done the exercise, but if you look at the numbers, I think he's there, or he's definitely on the cusp. So this is a pretty special punter, and I'm concerned. You know, Andrew Boyle comes from Washington State. He was a kickoff specialist. He was also listed as a punter, but based upon the stats I'm seeing here, he had two punts, right? 89 yards in 21, which is not terrible, right? That's 44 yards per punt.
That's pretty
very,
good.
Very small. Very small. You know, I don't have Adam Berry's. Actually, pull that up for me if you can. Give me Adam Berry's career stats from Temple because I would like to see what that looks like. But I did an article
about him. I don't remember it off the top of my head, though. Surprisingly, okay.
Disappointing. But
I know. I'm so sorry.
I bring this all up to say, like, I think this is one of the positions that is a little concerning. I'm confident in Joe Lorig and they'll get it figured out, but. You look at the rest of the special team stuff. We ran through the punters and kickoff return guys, the punt return and kickoff return guys. I like a lot of those names. A lot of those guys have already shown at Oregon that they can return. A lot of those guys were really high end players at other schools returning punts or kicks. So like, I don't have many concerns at all about who's returning punts and kicks. I think they'll have quality players out there. I think Camden Lewis is. I probably still have a little PTSD from 2019 and 20 when he was really not doing very well. But 2021, he was, again, if you want to do a Mount Rushmore of single season kicking, mm-hmm. like be surprised to find that Camden's is probably like a top 6 to 8 individual kicking season in school history. And he was second team all conference. Like I'm comfortable with Camden Lewis being your place kicker. I don't know what to think about punter. I got
some Adam Berry stats if you want them.
Hit me with it. What do you got?
All right, so Adam Berry last season at Temple punted 63 times, which is
a lot.
A lot. That's a lot of times.
Five per game.
63 times for 2,643 yards. That comes out to an average just shy of 42. When they played Cincinnati, he punted 7 times for 300 yards, about 43 yards per punt. His long on the season was 58. He only had 3 games all season where he did not have a punt that went over 50 yards. So I think he's got a boot on him. Okay. He had 13 punts out of the 63 last season that went over 50 yards. So I think that's pretty good. Only 13 that went inside the 20. But then again, that's all about like, was he punting from his own 10, blah, blah, blah. So I think he is certainly a contender. I could look up Ross James's stats too if you'd like me to.
Do that.
Can you filibuster for a
little bit? I can absolutely filibuster. How much do you need? 2 minutes? Minute and a half?
We'll see.
I think those numbers are really encouraging, by the way, from Barry. I admittedly hadn't looked, which is disappointing because I am the special teams guy.
Eric, Eastern Central Community College, their entire website already has it figured out. I don't have to do any math. Temple, what are we doing, guys? Come on.
Well, hit me with Ross James, and then we can do kind of the last thoughts on punter, and we'll sign off.
Sure thing. So Ross James, last season as a true freshman, had 62 punts. Good Lord.
Active.
For 2,514 yards, averaging just a shade over 40. 40 and a half to be exact. His long of the season was 63 yards, 21 plays inside the 20, 2 touchbacks all season.
Okay.
I think those are options.
Yeah, I was going to say, what I'm learning here is maybe this is a little bit further along than I think, or had thought. Boyle clearly being the number one, so to speak, on day one is interesting. It maybe speaks to the confidence there. And maybe I'm unnecessarily bedwetting, so to speak, in terms of just like I'm over here being a little too nervous. I haven't been I'll stop that thought. I guess it's a term I've heard used. But no, I guess maybe I'm too concerned here and I shouldn't be, because maybe these guys have a little better career resumes. Their CVs are a little better than I thought. But I do think that's a position to be kind of tracking for sure. And of the special positions, that's the one I know the least about or have the least confidence. What's up?
I got a question to turn this into a 30-minute long podcast.
We're already at 30 right now.
Right. Is there a world where Camden Lewis loses the kicking job to Alex Bales?
Sure. It's probably a world.
I'm just kind of going through the numbers right now. And here I am going down this rabbit hole. So our good friend Alex had 85 kickoffs. He was the kickoff specialist for Cincinnati, who went to, the college football playoffs.
By the way, before you even finish that thought, Jared, I would 100% concede Camden Lewis probably won't be the kickoff specialist. Okay. And I would say it sounds like I'm giving your guy, the Cincinnati dude, Bales, a pretty good shot at it. That's his responsibility. Because Camden would even tell you in the spring, that's a thing he needed to work on.
Yeah, and our good friend Bales, he has 84 kickoff attempts and 45 of them were touchbacks.
Good. It's pretty good.
That's a lot of kickoff attempts. That's a good amount. 45 is good. Only 3 out of bounds. I think Lewis had like 2 in a game at one point during his career. The other thing about Bales, he's 12 of 13 on point after attempts, but only 2 of 5 on field goals. So yeah. That could be how Oregon operates this season. Dan has said in the past about specifically young players, like figuring out what they're really good at, making them do that and not making them do something that they're not good at, which on paper, very good idea. That's how you should live life. But we'll see if he applies that terminology and that kind of coaching style to kicking, because I think that might behoove them to do so and have Camden as your kicking guy, your field goal kicker, and Bales as your touch or kickoff guy, your touchback specialist.
I kind of anticipate that'll be what happens. Again, day one of fall camp, a lot of time to go this fall, a lot of time to get into the season. As you said, Camden was the first one, quote unquote, operating as kickoff specialist still. We didn't see any plays kicking, so we really don't have anything to draw from. I think Camden, at least a year ago, maybe has a terrible fall camp and they take away the responsibility. I think Camden has enough goodwill coming off of 21 to open the season at least as a kicker. And then if it doesn't go well, it sounds like you at least have a guy behind him who can fill in. And the one thing I will also say, and I asked the question to Dan on Wednesday and he didn't answer, and we're extending this podcast in part because now I'm thinking about it. We were going to do a special teams preview for fall. And we didn't have enough information. We've kind of got some information now. So I think it's okay to extend this a little bit. We don't have to go too much longer. Jared's looking at his watch. He's like, I got dinner in 10.
Tyrone Taylor hit a home run off Robert Duggar at 102 miles an hour off the bat. So.
Sick. no, but I mean, so the point I was making was, I kind of lost my train of thought there, I think, a little bit. We're talking about punting. What was it talking about? I don't even know.
Kicking, punting, Camden Lewis.
Oh, kicking, punting, Camden Lewis. All the topics that I enjoy so much. I guess the point I was going to make was that we didn't talk much about it earlier this week. We wanted to get some information. You kind of go through it. It seems like they've got probably more options in terms of punters than I had given him credit without having Tom here. I know where I was going now. This is what I had asked Dan about, but he didn't give us any information on, is holding. And now this is getting super by
right. The details, right.
Usually it's been the punter that holds. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if that is something they continue to do. I even asked that straight up, like, is the plan for whoever wins the punting job to be the holder on field goals and extra points? And he didn't. He kind of talked his way around that one. Tom Snee was the holder the last 2 years when Camden Lewis really started to put it together, especially last year. I do wonder about losing some of that continuity. I know Camden talked in the spring about the value of having the same snapper having the same holder, having the same place kicker, and that kind of order of operations of the ball is going to get to this guy at this point of time. He knows how to put it down the way I like it, and I can kick it, and it's kind of, it becomes kind of second nature. I do wonder if interrupting, you know, removing one of those parts and putting somebody else in, if that could potentially negatively impact Camden a little bit, but just thinking through the process here. So I don't know. Is there more on special teams you have, Jared? Cause I think we've kind of run through all I was kind of thinking through.
No, I don't have anything more. I was just going to say, yeah, there's a chance that that could do something with Camden. But I don't know. I thought it was strange in general to just to begin with that Dan wouldn't really answer that question. I wonder why, what does that mean? It probably all means absolutely nothing, but it's that, you know, it just seems like a simple question to answer. I don't know if he's giving too much away by saying, oh yeah, we have Alex Bales. He's our backup kicker and our holder.
It probably means my question had too many questions in it and he chose to not answer that part of it, which I'm noticing if you ask him three questions, he's probably going to pick the one question you care least about. And I think that was a multi question I asked. So I'm learning, trying to figure out the best way to approach it. Oregon will be back on Saturday for its second day of fall camp. We'll have full coverage. We'll have practice reports. We'll give kind of the no. There was a player, I'm not even going to mention the name, but we'll see tomorrow. And if the player's healthy, I'll mention it. If he's not healthy, I'll mention it. There was a player we saw leaving practice, not a prominent player, but we did see someone leaving practice. We were told not to bring the players by name up, so I'm not going to. But we did see a guy leaving practice. Don't know about the severity of an injury, but left for the trainer. So that did happen. Didn't seem, again, super serious or anything. But wanted to throw that out there. We'll follow up on that tomorrow on our show because we'll have a practice report. We'll have interviews with Kenny Dillingham, the offensive coordinator, Tosh Lupoy, the defensive coordinator. Transcripts from both. We'll have videos from both. We'll have the whole shebang. So stick with us tomorrow. Sunday's an off day. They'll be back on Monday, though, and we'll have more coverage. So for Eric Scopel and Jared Mack, you've been listening to the Odds and Audibles podcast. Talk to you later, folks.
Peace.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.